on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP Financial Executive Vice President, Portfolio Manager, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to InvestTalk. This is our Monday, March 16th, 2015 edition of InvestTalk, and I'd like to welcome all of our listeners listening up and down California on our terrestrial stations, those listening online via investtalk.com, and those podcast listeners as well that are probably listening after hours at their own convenience through iTunes and so many other forms of that you can get podcasts these days. And there's hundreds and hundreds now of avenues that you can get podcasts, and we are on the vast majority of them. So I'm however you're listening to us, we are glad you're with us today, and our listenership spans a very wide range of age groups and levels of experience, so we rely on you to keep us on track. Your questions, comments, they really help us. They really keep us focused on your needs. So, you know, we have things that we want to discuss and things that we think are important and interesting, but ultimately we want to know what's important and interesting to our listeners. And so that's why we want to hear from you. Give us a call. 888-99-CHART is our number to get through and ask your question any time during the show, or even after hours. You can leave your question. We will answer it on the next show. Now, of course, the specifics of retirement differs for everyone, but the broad goal is always to have financial freedom to live your life in comfort, however you want to live it. And it's increasingly important to have an executable plan that grows and protects your assets. Now, most of us work all of our lives to provide for our families, but busy lives leaves little time to spend on retirement planning. And this is a daily job. And it's only when we get closer to retirement age when we begin to create a serious plan. But if you've been listening to the show for any length of time, you know that the sooner you start to build your nest egg, invest it, the higher likelihood you'll get to where you want to be, and the less stress you will have doing it. You know, when the day arrives and you retire, laying out a credible roadmap for success involves addressing your needs, identifying your risks, and finding the right opportunities. So those are really the three things, the needs. Okay, where do I need to be? How much money do I need to have? When am I going to retire? How much money am I going to spend in retirement? Therefore, how much money am I going to need in retirement, right? All those things matter and are the beginning steps that you must take to figure out how you want to invest that money and how much money you need to save. So once you figure that out, okay, what type of risk am I taking? What are the risks in the marketplace? And what are the opportunities as well? Now, everyone wants to be active in retirement and doing the things we like to do, but that takes financial independence, and achieving that freedom in the latter years of life requires not only diligent savings, but intelligent money management. And this is when your money needs to start working for you instead of you working for it. Now we're here to help you make smarter choices, to help protect you from making mistakes that can destroy a retirement plan. Really is probably the number one thing, is what it is to avoid the mistakes, avoid the giant pitfalls that so many people fall victim to because they're emotional, they chase returns, they buy into hype instead of being grounded in reality and logic. And that's ultimately what making good investment decisions are about, being grounded in logic and ignoring the hype. So it's never too late to start taking steps to prepare for retirement. And for some people, retirement does not have to mean no longer working. Maybe it's moving from one career to another. That's what Steve did. Steve retired, quote unquote, in his 40s. And now he's in his early 60s, and he's doing what he wants to do. He's been doing that for the past 15 years. So it may mean working less, enjoying life a little bit more. Now, as investment advisors, we help our clients achieve these goals. We try to extend the service to our radio and podcast audience as well. We want to be a trusted companion on that path because it's hard to find good trusted companions. So open up, talk to us. I want to hear what is on your mind. How can we help you, just like we help hundreds and actually at this point thousands of clients that we've helped in the past? So we do need you to join in and bring your questions and concerns to us. We want to hear your opinions as well. We are live 4 to 5 Pacific time each and every weekday, and our number is 888-99-CHART, and I hope you'll use it. Give me a call now. Let's take this question from our 24-hour listener line. Actually, no, we're not going to go 24-hour listener. We're going to go to Art in Menlo Park. How you doing, Art?
Good, Justin. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
I just wanted to find out, I don't know if you talked about it last week, but the dollar strengthened a lot last week, and I was just wondering what sectors will benefit from the strength of our dollar.
What sectors will benefit? That's a good question. Probably for the most domestic companies. Domestic retailers are probably the... will be the most benefited by a stronger dollar. But there are a lot of negatives, and it's not just the export sector, but it's the domestic companies that are now competing with foreign companies who produce goods overseas and even services overseas. So there's a lot of headwinds that it does create, and that's probably why you've seen the economic numbers weaken here over the past month or two. You know, what sectors, like I said, I think domestic retail for the most part, are the restaurant sector, I think that's probably the best sector that will do well, because it's hard to compete if you're doing business in China or some other area of the world when it comes to restaurants, because food is made here, it's basically, I mean, and it's restaurants, they're serviced here. So I would say food and restaurants, those are the sectors that would benefit the most from a stronger dollar.
Would it help the transport sector at all, or certain domestic carriers, that type of thing?
Well, you know, the lower commodity prices help some transports, definitely. It's hurting some railroads, and it depends on what part of the transportation sector you're talking about. You're talking about railroads, it's kind of hurting the railroads because they've done so well based on shipping all this oil via rail and making a lot of money. Well, those volumes are going to fall off here coming up pretty soon. The airlines are definitely helped by it. You know, they're going to, a lot more people are going to be planning on going in for trips overseas, so that helps. The lower fuel costs helps. You know, my biggest issue is that at some point, the airline sector is going to start to expand again. It's been consolidating, and that's why profitability has been improved, etc. So I think in the short term it could help, but I think long term airlines are very, very expensive. So I don't know if that's the place I would want to be. So transports selectively, yes. Trucking companies probably for the most part. But I think railroads are probably actually hurt more than anything.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Justin.
No problem. Thanks for calling in. Let's go to Ben in San Mateo. How you doing, Ben?
Hey, great. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
My question is, how do you feel about trying to diversify your portfolio away from large cap U.S. by using emerging markets, Pacific, and European ETFs? I'm using Vanguard myself. And which of the three do you like the most, if any?
I like that idea, especially if you're thinking more long term. Now, there could be some hiccups with the Fed raising rates, and that really hit emerging markets back in 2013 when we had the taper tantrum. Remember that? And that really hurt that sector, and it hasn't really recovered, but it also hasn't really collapsed either. So there's definitely some risk for emerging markets and foreign markets in the shorter term. But when you're talking about valuation long term, it's far more attractive in emerging markets than it is here in the U.S., especially large cap as well.
And how about Europe and Pacific, like Japan and Europe?
Yeah, same thing. I mean, you know, Europe, I think, is still a little expensive, and there's obviously that downside potential if Greece doesn't stay in the euro in the short term. I think long term Greece will eventually exit. It could be, you know, this year. It could be, you know, the next 10 years. It's hard to know. But, you know, talking about valuation wise, foreign markets are definitely more attractive from a value standpoint. But as we talk about a lot in the show, value in the short term doesn't really play well. It doesn't. I don't want to say it doesn't matter, but it's a minor factor in the short term of things. But when you're talking about long term, you're trying to rebalance your portfolio for the long term, find better values longer term. I think rebalancing the emerging markets and even a little bit in the domestic, or not domestic, but the developed European markets, I think that's a good idea as well.
Do you have any thoughts on frontier? That's my last question. I just wondered, you know, something like the frontier markets like Africa, and would you ever dabble in that as far as a diversification, say 5% of your portfolio, or is that just going too far?
You know, 5's a little high for me. You know, I frontier markets are interesting. They definitely have to fit in the context of the risk that you want to take. They're very high risk, right? So I don't know. It depends on what type of risk you're willing to take. A lot of people probably shouldn't be taking that type of risk, to be frank. But if you're the type that is willing and able to take higher levels of risk, I think over the long term, I think they will do well. But, you know, once again, this is to me, it's emerging markets amplified times, you know, 5. And emerging markets generally are risky endeavors. And, you know, when financial liquidity tightens a little bit, it hurts higher risk sectors of the market the most, and that is emerging markets and frontier markets. So I think you'll have probably a better opportunity in the near future, next few years, to get into frontier markets. I think it's good to have in your watch list, but I probably wouldn't do it at this time.
Okay, thanks a lot, Justin.
No problem, Ben. Thanks for calling in. Now, a regular checkup for your retirement portfolio is more than a good idea. It is really essential. Now, Steve commits at least 2 days a month to sitting down with individual listeners to offer his suggestions. And he'll be in San Ramon tomorrow, March 17th, followed by San Jose on March 18th. To reserve your time, just go to investtalk.com, click on the schedule a meeting button, and our staff will get right back to you.
Managing multiple mutual funds, researching professional services, where to put your savings. If it's about money and if it's important to you, we want to know more about it. We're here for you. 888-99-CHART is how to reach Steve or Justin right now on InvestTalk.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. That's our number to get through and ask your questions. We have about 40 minutes left in the show. And I always tell people to call sooner rather than later. And I think Joe in the Bay Area called and then he hung up. So we want to talk to you. Give us a call back. Now, there's been an increase in complaints of fraudulent investment schemes associated with self-directed IRAs. So we're going to talk today about self-directed IRAs and the risk of fraud. And this is coming straight from the SEC, the Securities Exchange Commission. And it's talking about the increased levels of fraud, increased levels of fraud activity in self-directed IRA accounts. Now, these are a little bit different than the typical IRA accounts you're thinking of. It has to do with the custodian. It broadens out the available investments you can make in them. But it also opens these accounts up to really bad investments. And if you have anyone that's touting an investment that's trying to get you to open up a self-directed IRA, the odds are that it's going to be I don't say the odds are, but there's a much higher likelihood that it's fraudulent, that investment is fraudulent, than if you're just buying, you know, typical mutual funds, stocks, etc., that you would in a regular brokerage account. So we're going to talk about that. I also have a few other topics as well. Talking about the stock and bond disconnect, I want to touch on that. I want to touch on 7 money moves for the 5 years before retirement. And then I'm going to talk about the FOMC meeting that's coming up starting tomorrow. They're going to announce their decision on rates and their wording on Wednesday. And I want to touch on, what does that mean? What are they thinking about? What are the trends going on when it comes to the economics of our economy and the Federal Reserve? I'm Portfolio Manager Justin Klein, 888-99-CHART is how to reach me right now with your money topic. On InvestTalk, I'm ready for your call right now. Let's talk.
We thank you for subscribing to our podcast. Stock and bond markets across emerging markets are often up and down in lockstep. Well, they were, but not anymore. The mayhem of emerging market investing. That's our talking point next time. Be sure to join us on Invest Talk.
Let's go to Joe in the Bay Area. How are you doing, Joe?
Doing fine. Can you hear me? I've got a bunch of noise here, but can you hear me, Justin?
I can, yes.
Hello.
What can I do for you?
Okay, thank you. Do you know how well a good financial advisor did using, for example, charting, technical analysis, and fundamentals, how well that a good analyst did, advisor did, compared to, say, an advisor who did not use technical analysis and fundamentals?
Well, if...
Hello?
Yeah. I think you need to turn down your radio. I think that may be your issue.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go.
Yeah, no problem.
Go ahead.
So you're asking, how does a financial advisor do who uses fundamental and technical analysis versus an advisor that doesn't use fundamental and technical analysis? Is that what you're asking?
Exactly. Particularly, say, if you use the most recent downturn of 2007, 2008, maybe as a gauge.
Okay. Well, you know, most advisors, they use one or the other or both. So, you know, if you're not using fundamental analysis, then you're probably using technical analysis or some sort of quantitative analysis, but usually that has something to do with fundamental analysis. So, you know, some advisors, they only use fundamental analysis and not technical analysis. For everybody else out there, when you're talking about the difference between fundamental and technical analysis, is fundamental analysis is understanding the business, the earnings of the business, the profitability,
right,
all those financial numbers, right? Where technical analysis is reading charts, etc. You know, we as financial advisors, we use both. Both of them matter greatly. Fundamental analysis matters more than technical, but they do go hand in hand. I don't know of any advisors that don't use one or the other or both. So I can't really answer that question. And if they don't, I would wonder how they make investment decisions. Because if they're not using one of those two methods, I would be dumbfounded to figure out how they would make decisions.
At KPP, use both. And do you follow volume and distribution, I assume?
Yeah, we follow volume, distribution. We follow we have access to every technical indicator you can probably think of through our charting program. We probably only use about a dozen or so of the different variables that we found useful over time. But, you know, like I said, we use both fundamental and technical analysis.
Does the individual investor control his own account with respect to buying and selling? And you do the advising, or do you actually...
No. So what we do is we handle the entire account for them. So we trade how we feel needs to be traded based on the risk tolerance of that particular program, that particular individual, and if the client wants to trade themselves, you know, they can take portion of that money and trade it themselves, etc. But we always ask our clients not to trade because it messes up what we're doing.
I got you. Okay, very good. Okay. Appreciate your answers. Thank you very much.
No problem, Joe. Thanks for calling in. Let's go to BJ in Fremont. How are you doing, BJ?
I'm doing good, Justin. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
I have a simple question. I heard that it is a good idea to invest your 401k into both Roth 401k and regular 401k, the part in both. Does it make sense, especially for people who are in a high tax bracket?
If you're in a high tax bracket, no, probably a Roth IRA isn't the greatest thing. Because you always, when you're putting your money into whether it's a Roth 401k or a Roth IRA, remember that is after-tax money. So you're not going to be able to write that dollar amount off, right? So you're taxed on that money. You're paying tax on it, basically. Now, you will never be taxed again, but right now, if you're in a high tax bracket, you're paying a high tax percentage on that. So if that's your case, I would say a Roth is probably not a good idea. Because in retirement, you'll probably be in a lower tax bracket because you won't be working, right? So now, if you get laid off or for some reason you find yourself have huge write-offs and you'll be able to get yourself into a low tax bracket in any particular year, then yeah, then that's a good idea to put money into a Roth IRA or Roth 401k. But it sounds like you, BJ, you're in a high tax bracket. So it's hard to make that argument that you want to lock in a high tax rate on that money you're contributing. Does that
make
sense?
All right. Thank you.
No problem.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling, BJ. It's a great question, and that's why we always say young people usually a Roth 401k or a Roth IRA is good because most young people aren't making a lot of money and they're in a low tax bracket. Now there are some young people that are making a ton of money, especially up in Silicon Valley, and maybe they're in a high tax bracket, so it might not be appropriate for them. So it's always best Roth IRAs, Roth 401ks if you're in a low tax bracket. Now coming up in the next half hour, it's tax time, and that means it's time for tax scams. What to watch for. That's in the next half hour on Invest Talk Personal. If you have a question, you know how to reach me. Number is the same as always, 888-99-CHART. Chart 888-992-4278. Let's talk about our talking point today, and it's about self-directed IRAs and the risk of fraud. This is a report that came out from the SEC, and they are kind of warning people about the problems of these self-directed IRAs. Now, most people go, okay, what is a self-directed IRA? Well, a self-directed IRA is when there's traditional custodians, right, that hold the assets of normal IRAs, regular IRAs, Roth IRAs, thinking of the JP Morgans of the world, the Fidelities, the Schwabs, etc. And they, and when you have an account with them, you can only invest in registered securities, so securities that are registered to the SEC. Registered bonds, mutual funds, stocks, etc. Now, these self-directed IRAs, they have the custodians and trustees of them have limited duties to investors, and the custodians and trustees of these accounts will generally not evaluate the quality or legitimacy of an investment and its promoters. So you should always check with regulators about the background and history of an investment and its promoters before making an investment decision. Now, most traditional IRAs, Roth IRAs, like I said, SEP IRAs, simple IRAs, these are all held traditionally at really large custodians, and they're held by entities that are approved by the IRS to act as trustee or custodians. Now, self-directed IRA is held also by a trustee or custodian, but it permits a much broader set of assets inside that particular account, beyond just, like I said, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, CDs. They allow things like real estate, promissory notes, tax liens, certificates, or tax liens, private placement securities. And investments in these kind of assets may have unique risks that investors, most investors, don't understand. And usually it involves lack of disclosure and liquidity, as well as the risk of fraud. Now, according to the 2011 report, there was about $4.7 trillion in IRAs. And about 2% of them were held in self-directed IRAs. That doesn't sound like a lot, but that's $94 billion. Now, if anybody approaches you and wants you to open up a self-directed IRA so that you can invest in their particular investment that they're pushing, be very, very, very wary. Very wary. Fraud promoters who want to engage in Ponzi schemes or other fraudulent conduct may exploit self-directed IRAs because they permit investors to hold these unregistered securities, securities that haven't been looked over by the SEC. That no one, there's no third party trying to figure out, is this make sense? Are the things that they're touting to investors, are they true? So you should always investigate the securities and the background of whoever is promoting it. Fraud promoters often explicitly state or suggest that self-directed IRA custodians investigate and validate an investment in a self-directed IRA. And that's not true. Usually the custodial agreements tell you that they don't do it. They do not evaluate it. So don't think that you're getting they're getting double-checked. Also, the fact that from an IRA you get there's early withdrawal penalties, what it does is allows these fraud promoters to perpetuate their fraud much longer because you're not thinking about taking that money out. Okay. So what are the ways to avoid fraud? First is to be aware that, you know, a lot of the custodians, they'll show in your statement that the price is X, right? And usually that's whatever the security was bought at. Well, that's not necessarily what you can actually sell that security at because they're usually very illiquid. And there's no, it doesn't trade a lot, ever really, or very often. So there's not a market for it. So it can't say, oh, well, last time it traded at X price, like a traditional stock. That's what it says in your statement. What was it that stock last traded at, or mutual fund, or bond, or whatever. But these aren't really traded. So you might think that your account is worth X, because your statement says it. But if you want to go and try to sell that security, odds are you're going to get much, much lower because it's not a liquid investment. Number two, avoid unsolicited investment offers, like I said. Three, ask questions. Always ask the person offering the investment if they're licensed. Is the investment registered? The SEC has a list of questions that you should ask these people. So go to the SEC website, find that list. It's just called Ask Questions. Be mindful of guaranteed returns. If somebody, if an investor, somebody's trying to sell you an investment and they say that they're returns are guaranteed. Nothing's guaranteed. There's low risk, there's medium risk, there's high risk, there's extremely high risk, but no investment has no risk. There's always some risk. It could be minuscule, but there's always some risk. And then always ask a professional. Try to ask somebody not related to that person. So what do you think of this? Somebody who's qualified. Call us up. Ask us. Ask us at the office, on air, either way. All right? And then the SEC gives a few examples. One is SEC versus United American Ventures. They offered $10 million in bonds to raise money for investments in medical technology. And about $3.5 million of that $10 million was raised from self-directed IRAs. Complete fraud. SEC versus Stinton, $16 million were raised from 140 investors. This was a Ponzi scheme. They were touted as safe and risk-free returns. And $9.2 million of the $16 million was from self-directed IRAs. Then the SEC versus Dermaz, $20 million was raised, another Ponzi scheme. And all $20 million was raised from self-directed IRAs. And there's a few other examples, but I think you get the gist of it. Self-directed IRAs, be very, very wary, especially if someone's trying to push you into one of them. Now, Invest Talk is a two-way conversation, but if you have a question between programs, you can always ask us and call our number, 888-99-CHART, and we will answer it on the next program.
Hi, my name's Kevin. I'm calling from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I just wanted to get your thoughts on the stock ticker EXPD, Expeditors International of Washington. Thank you very much.
All right, he's looking at EXPD is the symbol. This is Expeditors of International of Washington. They provide global logistics services, including the consolidation or forwarding of air and ocean freight. It's a company that has had fairly steady earnings growth over the years. Supposed to grow 11% this year, 10% next year, 1.3% dividend yield. Raised their dividend middle of last year. I like their P ratio is 25, a little steep for my liking. They have no debt. I love that. Zero debt is a big, big plus for me. Our value is probably in the high 40s, maybe low 50s. You know, no valuation number is ever perfect, but that's kind of the range that we would target at, and it's at 49 now. So I would say it's about fairly valued, maybe slightly undervalued at these levels. The chart is very strong. I like that. It's broken above a lot of resistance. I like that. Let's take a look at the profitability metrics, because I think that's always important to see whether they're becoming more profitable or less profitable. Their net margins are right about a little bit below 6%, which is right in line with where they've been for the last 10 years, been pretty much between 5 and 6% net margins. So they're still in that. It doesn't look like any deterioration in profitability, which is good. Return equity is 19%, which is solid with very little debt. That's always great. Good free cash flow. That's good as well. About $357 million in free cash flow per year on a company. It's $9 billion in market cap. So you have about a 3% free cash flow yield, which isn't exciting. And kind of brings me to that same conclusion. It's fairly valued, good company, profitable. Long term, I think you'll do well with it. You know, if you hit a recession, it's going to be cyclical. So you'll probably see a downturn in the stock. But right now, you're seeing it's pretty strong. Numbers are solid. I like it. Don't love it because it's not super undervalued. But over the long term, if that's your time horizon, I think you'll do pretty well. So that was Expeditors International. The symbol is EXPD. Now, InvestTalk Personal is the day-to-day personal finance help that can have a lasting impact, and that's what we're going to get into. And it's tax time, and it's when scammers come out in full force. So how do you spot them before they take you? Now, first, someone calls claiming to be an IRS agent and tells you to send money, hang up. Scammers change caller ID numbers so it looks like they're calling from the IRS. They often threaten people with arrest, deportation, or loss of driver's license. And the IRS doesn't do that. Bottom line, they send you a letter first, more than anything. So they're not going to call you. Then there's phishing and other fake IRS emails. The scammers send out emails that claim that the recipient either owes money or is due a refund. Then when scammers steal your ID, they can steal your refund. They file early in the season, beating you to the punch and your money. So don't carry your Social Security card or documents displaying your Social Security number. And don't give out your Social Security number just because a doctor's office or their business asks. Okay? Be very wary of who you give that to. And here's one more of many scams that claim victims. Beware of questionable tax preparers. Make sure your tax preparer has a prepare tax identification number, PTIN, for 2015. This certifies that the person is authorized to prepare federal tax returns. Because if they aren't, why are they even asking you about your taxes? Why are they even trying to do your taxes? They could be trying to steal your identity, steal your information so that they can file your return and get the refund before you. And it doesn't even have to be an accurate return. We've seen this before. This was on 60 Minutes about a year ago. I heard it about a little over a year ago. It's a very popular scam. They're stealing people's identities, and they are filing a return on your behalf. And you're going, well, why would they do that? Why would they want to pay taxes on my behalf? Well, they don't. They're filing a fraudulent return saying that you made a lot less money than you really did. And they make sure they keep it within a certain amount, because if it's under a certain number, I forget the number, but if it's under a certain amount, the refund is, the federal government automatically will send out that refund, whether or not it's accurate. Doesn't matter. They just send it out. And then these fraudsters, they get that check from the government. They have a fake driver's license or fake, you know, identification, take it to a bank, and they cash it. They do this a lot of times, hundreds of times each year. And then you're stuck with the problem and fixing this issue, proving that it wasn't you that filed it, etc. So be wary of who gets your information. Now that's Invest Talk Personal. Do you have more questions about mutual funds, stocks, bonds, whatever it is, give us a call now or click on the Contact Steve or Contact Justin button on InvestTalk.com.
What industries are tied to oil? Which ones are impacted by lower oil prices? Where are the opportunities for investors right now? Invest an hour with Steve and Justin this week, March 19th at 6 p.m. Pacific Time. It's free and you can register right now for it on InvestTalk.com.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We have the FOMC meeting coming up. FOMC meeting, it starts tomorrow. Their announcement will be on Wednesday. And the market's primary concern is whether the FOMC will remove the word patient from its forward guidance, which means they've continued to say that we're going to be patient on raising rates. We're going to be... It's going to be a considerable time before we raise rates. Well, they seem poised to get rid of that language, which means that they could raise rates by as early as June. I don't think rates are going to go up dramatically if they do raise rates. You know, they only go from basically zero. I think the Fed funds rate right now, effective, is about 11 basis points, 0.11%. Probably raise it to 25 basis points. And see how the market reacts, see how the financial markets react. Now, given the FOMC meetings remaining in 2015, it seems difficult also to see that the target that many of the Fed presidents have of a Fed funds rate of about 1.25% by the end of the year to be reached. Because I think after the June meeting, they only have about 4 meetings left. So they would have to raise rates starting in June and every meeting after that to get to that 1.25%. So it'll be interesting to see where they adjust their targets for the end of the year. And they have their dots that they're gonna bring out. And it's even more difficult now because you're starting to see some weakness on the economic front. A manufacturing output is reflecting decelerating export demand, which is an issue. Capacity utilization fell a little bit this last month. You're seeing the Empire Manufacturing Report showed current and future inventories declining in a negative territory. That's not good. Leading economic indicators are now about flat from rising about 1% back in July. So you're seeing pretty interesting economic numbers coming out recently. Now let's get your questions answered today. Give us a call, 888-99-CHART.
Our InvestTalk podcast distribution is made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. And Steve hopes you'll sign up for our free wealth webinar coming up this week, March 19th. The upside of lower oil prices. Is the lower price of oil an opportunity for you? Are there industries that are priced right now because of lower oil prices? Again, it's coming up March 19th, 6 p.m. Pacific Time. Sign up. It's free on InvestTalk.com.
888-99 chart, 888-992-4278. We have 5 minutes left in the show, so if you're going to call in, do it ASAP. Let's talk about 7 money moves for the 5 years before retirement. And we're all hopefully going to get there when retirement is on the horizon, and the things that you're going to be worried about in retirement are and you probably haven't thought about, are coming at you pretty quick. And I actually did this with my mom over the weekend. She is turning 55 this year. She's probably going to retire not in the next 5 years, but 7 to 10 years. And this is about the time you need to start thinking about certain things. And I went over, you know, what her debts were, what her income is now, what her expenses are, what her expenses are probably going to be in the future, how much she's going to get from Social Security. We went to the Social Security website and figured out, okay, if she takes it at 62, she get X, 65, X, 67, you know, another amount. And then she has a pension from her employer that she's going to get. She could start taking it this year, but probably going to push it off into her 60s because she'll get more money, etc. And she needs to cover her monthly outgo when she does retire. And these are the things you have to start thinking about. So what are some of the things that you must consider? One is to make sure you arrive at retirement debt-free. You know, debt payments represent a direct reduction in retirement income. So if you have outstanding balances in credit cards, installment loans, car loans, and even your mortgage, try to pay that off by the time you retire. It's one of the most cost-effective maneuvers you can make at the point of retirement, is to get rid of all your debt so you have no servicing of any debt, including your mortgage. We always say, we even tell our clients, try to pay off your mortgage by the time you retire. And then try to trim your living expenses. Cut out some products or services that you probably won't need when you retire. Start to try to eliminate them earlier. Pick 1 or 2 expenses per year. By the time you retire, you've probably taken a good amount of expenses out of your daily life. Then reduce the risk in your portfolio, or change the risk in your portfolio. Your goals are going to be a little bit different. So you need to adjust for that. Maybe you're already where you need to be, but you need to think about it. Okay? Then what about your post-retirement career or business? A lot of people are doing that now, especially because when 65, you know, 7 years ago, 65, most people were going to pass away soon after 65. Now most people live into their 80s. Many live into their 90s. And so that's a lot of years to not do anything, not be productive. So start thinking about, maybe it's just a part-time job with your current company. Maybe it's another company you have a part-time job with, so you're getting some other type of income, something you want to do rather than have to do. Maybe you'll start a small business. Start thinking about that. Maybe you need to delay your retirement. That's something we do with clients. Figure out, okay, when do you want to retire? How much do you have today? How much are you saving a month? What risk level are you able to take, willing to take? How much money are you going to need every month in retirement? And then you can figure out, can you retire at that date? That's what we tell our clients. We figure out for our clients, can you retire at the date that you want to retire? Maybe you need to put it off a few years. You know, that's something we figured out with my mom. She wanted to retire at 62. Realized probably she can't. She probably should wait till she's 65. And I think the last one's most important. Get and stay healthy by creating a healthy lifestyle. You know, once you get in your 50s, a lot of people develop chronic health-related conditions. And this can increase the cost of your retirement. So it's much cheaper to eat better, get exercise, and not have such high medical costs. And ultimately, you'll be happier as well. So those are some things you need to think about when you're worried or you're approaching retirement or start to think about retirement. Now, before we close the hour, you've heard us talk about our webinar coming up in the next couple days. It's on March 19th on this Thursday at 6 p.m. Pacific Time. The upside of lower oil prices. You can register now on investtalk.com. We're going to talk about oil and the whole industry and also have a Q&A session, about a half-hour Q&A session on the back end as well. I'm Portfolio Manager Justin Klein, and for Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP Financial, I thank you for listening today, and let's hook up again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461.